Welcome to the Innovators and Investors Podcast. I'm Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of Finstrat Management. At Finstrat, we provide CFO-led accounting, finance, and reporting services to assist clients monetize their business. Stick around to the end of the podcast, and I'll share how you can be our next guest. Now, on to the show. Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Innovators and Investors Podcast. I'm your host, Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of Finstrat Management. Today, we're really fortunate because we have Sarah Applebaum with us. Sarah is a partner with Pangea Ventures. Sarah, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks so much for having me, Christian.
Pleasure. Let's start with Pangea Ventures. Would love to know what the investment thesis is.
Absolutely. So Pangea Ventures is a hard tech focused venture fund. We're investing in companies that are leveraging advancements in materials, chemistry, and biology with a strong focus on planetary health. That includes, you know, companies and technologies related to industrial decarbonization, energy transition, critical metals and minerals, green chemistry, sustainable materials, food systems, and agritech, usually with a decarbonization angle, and then a bit of a focus in human health and well-being as well.
Wow. So obviously super impressive. I'm just taking stock of listening to what you had to share. Oh my gosh. So a whole bunch we can unpack. But let me start with this. I'd love to know a little bit about your background and what led you to investing in this space.
Yeah, so maybe I'll start with the history of Pangea and then sort of where I fit in and how I got involved in venture capital. You know, Pangea is, in its 25th year of investing in hard tech, currently investing out of Fund 5. And we've always, from day one, had a focus on hard tech. And there are sort of two primary reasons for that. The first is, you know, our mission at Pangea has always been to back entrepreneurs that are solving some of the world's biggest problems. And hard tech solutions are at the core, at the heart of that. The second is we've been really fortunate over, you know, the last decade and a half, especially with our three most recent funds, to partner with world-class leading strategic corporate investors, so large industrial and chemical companies, as LPs in our funds. And this is what, you know, they're experts in. And so we're really able to interface with our LPs, better understand, you know, where they think the puck is going, what are their strategic interest areas for their businesses, and how we can, you know, place smarter bets with their capital and invest in world-changing startups. So that's sort of the history of Pangea. I don't know, you want me to pause there or?
Well, you know, as I'm listening, one of the things I think about is that there has to be, imagine there's a profile, and like, so sustainability is top of mind. You know, when you look at these different technology, what's the due diligence lens that helps surface whether or not it could be a good fit?
Yeah, that's a really great question. And, you know, something that has taken us, you know, many years to refine. We are investing at Pangea primarily in the Series A, but really what we're looking for is companies that have transitioned from primarily research and development or scientific discovery into commercial deployment. So, you know, the inventors of the technology, the primary researchers have scaled the technology out of the lab, so away from the bench, deployed the technology in real world conditions. So we validate already independently with customers and third party groups that the technology works. We're also looking to invest in companies that have early evidence of product market fit. So they've been able to bring at least one customer to the table. Ideally, they've realized commercial revenue through selling their product or service to at least one customer, or have, you know, successfully deployed a pilot with a binding purchase order or offtake agreement standing behind that, you know, upon achievement of certain milestones. So I'd say that's the key framework for how we look at it at Pangea. You know, we know that technology development cycles, especially in hard tech, can be a little bit longer than in some other industries. And so for us as a 10-year traditional venture fund, we need to make sure that we're investing in companies that are at that sort of inflection point of commercial traction. You know, we can't just fall in love with the technology, whether it's around carbon removal or critical metals and minerals processing or alternative proteins. It's the team that's behind this technology that's really driving the commercial activities that is so important. And we spend 75, 80%, maybe more of our due diligence time and effort in really building relationships with and getting to know the management teams.
Okay. And so I'd like to come back to this as well, but as I mentioned a moment ago, your background leading up to it, because I have a strong feeling that it's going to help shape the rest of the conversation. How did you find yourself investing in hardtech?
So I found myself in venture capital purely by accident. So I spent most of my career, my professional career, with Pangaea Ventures in venture capital. I joined the firm in 2012 as a bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, super keen MBA graduate with a focus on, environmental business and sustainability. My background is in environmental science, and I knew I wanted to build my career in sort of climate action, climate change, sustainability. I'm based in Canada. Our venture capital industry is more nascent than that in the US. Some LPs and major allocators actually consider Canada to still be an emerging market within this asset class. And so when I started chatting with Pangea and was introduced to the company and what they were doing, I actually didn't know anything about venture capital. I didn't know anybody who worked in venture capital or anything about the industry. But as I spent time with the principals at the organization at the time and learned more about the thesis behind Pangea and the mission of the organization and the types of entrepreneurs that they were working with, I was just so excited to, be a part of that journey.
Long time, 13 years. How's it evolved since 2012?
Yeah, I think there's a few things that have evolved since I first joined Pangea. The first is, as any good investor, we're hearing from the market and learning and evolving our investment thesis. So one of those evolutions is around stage of investment. We have moved a little bit later stage. Our third fund, which we were deploying when I first joined, was more of a seed stage investor. We were really joining at the first institutional round. And we've now moved a little bit later stage, primarily based on, some of the feedback we've learned from working with those early stage entrepreneurs, commercialization timelines, where we see the inflection points, and how do we maximize value for our investors. So that's one. The second is about 6 or 7 years ago, with our fourth fund, we added sort of health and life sciences as a more explicit investment focus as we expanded, our view of sustainability, healthy planet, healthy people, and continue to deploy capital in that avenue. And then the third is starting to think a little bit outside the box when it comes to geography. So, for the last 2 decades, we've had a firm presence in North America with offices in Canada and the United States. But last March, March 2024, we established a physical presence in Japan. So
Sure.
we now have an office in Tokyo, not only to support our LPs and our corporate strategic partners that are based in Japan, but also to explore that market for net new investment and capital deployment. Japan is such a wealth of hard tech innovation. Really is a world leader when it comes to innovation in areas that, we seem to care a lot about, like batteries and energy storage, semiconductor manufacturing, life sciences, and healthcare.
I'm out of curiosity, so big leap. In fact, I was waiting for you to say Europe, not. Have you a little bit in the weeds, but have you noticed any barriers around culture or anything else that you weren't maybe were expecting, but have found to be unique?
Well, we haven't, I want to be clear, we haven't yet made any investments in Japan. We are still in the early stages of evaluating that market, building relationships with entrepreneurs there. You know, we've seen some really phenomenal companies, and are running them through our diligence process now. The biggest barrier to doing business in Japan is language. I think that's the very obvious one. There are obviously ways around that, but we our investment lead in Tokyo is a Japanese national. She's fluent in Japanese and also in English, and so is able to help us sort of navigate and manage that quite effectively. At the end of the day, we're investing in companies that can scale globally. And whether you're investing in Tokyo or in Seoul or in Paris or in the US, you need a management team that, is thinking globally and has the ability to conduct business internationally. So there need to be executives on the team who have that mindset, have those capabilities, and some of that is, language skills.
I'm curious, so we can expand on just, the culture of nations. If what's your experience been? Do you find that this idea of investing in the planet is universal, or do you really find that some societies are not prioritizing it like others?
I think when you really drill down into what's important to people, a healthy planet and a healthy environment that's safe for everybody is universally accepted. It's something that everybody wants for themselves, for their neighbors, for their kids, for their families, and you're not going to get a lot of pushback. Where we see nuances is in two things primarily. One is, what is the language that's used? And there are regional differences, whether it's climate tech, sustainability, ESG. In some geographies, sustainability has more of a philanthropic association than climate tech or planetary health. And so it's just making sure that you're speaking the right language with the stakeholders in those regions and those geographies. The second is, depending on who you're engaging with, in what country or location, and what their sort of primary job function is climate tech, sustainability, planetary health their number one problem? Or is there something else that's a higher urgency, whether it's housing affordability, access to affordable, high quality food and nutrition, clean drinking water? And some of these have climate impacts tightly linked to them, but for communities for whom basic needs aren't being met, they don't really care whether or not we're going to hit our 2030 climate goals if they can't afford to put food on the table for their families and can't afford high quality healthcare.
Totally makes sense. Outside my wheelhouse, but you hear conversations of China's has to address its energy dependency, and so the number of coal plants that they're bringing online in any given month is material. And of course, you natural to ask the question, well, what's the impact of the carbon emissions that are coming from those plants? And I've also participated in conversations around India, and how they still have entire segments of their country that they still have to put infrastructure in place before you can think about, how do you, appropriately dispose of sewage or wastewater. And so totally makes sense, what you're saying. And I would imagine that the more developed the nation, maybe the easier it is to find like-minded people whose where your mission resonates with them.
Well, on the one hand, yes. On the other hand, I think we're going to see parts of the world take a different, technology development roadmap than we did in North America and the US, where there's, advancements that leapfrog that. If you go to India and you're driving around Delhi, the air quality certain times of year is absolutely atrocious. And the citizens, of India don't want to breathe, polluted, congested air. They want clean, healthy air as well. And if there are technology solutions for power generation that, enable that, maybe they don't go coal, natural gas, renewables and they leapfrog us in that respect. And I think looking at, Africa, for example, in telecoms is a great example. They didn't build out a landline infrastructure. They just leapfrogged directly to mobile. And, I really hope that we're going to start to see more of that on the energy and infrastructure side.
Okay. So fast forward till today, and now you have an opportunity to make an investment. What's the degree that Pangea will get involved in working alongside founders?
Yeah, we like to be really active investors. We want to be deploying our capital into companies where we think we can add value. So it's in technology, industries, market applications where we, hopefully know something about. We have team members who, have lived experience in that industry. One or more of our limited partners have active business in that segment, where we can really sort of help inform the technology and go-to-market roadmap for these businesses. We often act as a lead investor for the financings that we participate in. So we're, involved in helping build the syndicate, negotiating the terms of the deal, and putting those structures in place. And then as part of that, we often also join the board of directors. But we really like to think of ourselves as partners and collaborators with both the other investors and the management teams that we're investing in.
So, I love it. My sense is that when founders have a strong and dependable group of investors behind them, odds for success increase. And I agree also with your assessment that founding teams are a very large part of the equation. But also, a lot of these technologies are nascent. And you mentioned your experts. How do you walk the line behind just brand new technologies that while they do have traction, as you pointed out, where you're investing, may still have a long way to go to have a global impact?
Yeah, great question. And that's part of our diligence process and how we underwrite investments. And so if we think there's potential for a technology to be truly game changing, but there's a long commercialization road ahead of it, even if there is sort of one partner at the table, that might be reflected in, our expectations around valuation on entry for the first investment. Or alternatively, we might continue to watch that company and monitor it for many years until they hit that inflection point where we think their commercialization timeline and roadmap is more appropriate for, a VC investor or a non-strategic investor with a 10-year fund. And so there's always some tension there, but we're really looking for those immediate market signals to help us drive our capital placement. While we are investing or we want to be investing in sort of game-changing and breakthrough technology companies, we have a limited time horizon, and we're very cognizant of that. And so we're trying to manage that.
Makes complete sense. And so you may know what I'm gonna ask you next. What are you currently bullish on? What's exciting you at the moment?
Ooh, great question. We are pretty bullish on all things semiconductor manufacturing right now for a couple of reasons. One is there's obviously tremendous pressure both in the US and in other geographies to reshore or build domestic capacity for semiconductor manufacturing just in the face of geopolitical risk. We're seeing this in other industries as well, like pharmaceuticals and critical metals. So there's a lot of investment and a lot of interest in how do we build capacity and capabilities. Some of that is related to technology advancement and innovation to help drive costs down, efficiencies up. And then how do we manage the waste that comes out of these processes, and maybe more importantly, the water intensity of semiconductor manufacturing. We see semiconductor fabrication facilities going into water-stressed regions, like Arizona, for example. And so how that water is treated, what technologies are available to help these fab manufacturers recover and reuse more of the water that they require is something that we're pretty interested and excited about. And then, of course, you can't talk about semiconductors without talking about AI. and the drive there. And so there's just going to be more and more and more need for next generation semiconductor chips and infrastructure. And so we're pretty bullish on that for the long term. I think the other sector that we're continuing to have high interest in is critical metals and minerals and technologies that both can recover metals from waste streams, whether it's mine tailings or electronic waste or other secondary sources, but also recover metals in a more environmentally friendly and responsible way. This is really what's going to fuel the energy transition. And in the context of a changing geopolitical landscape, we're seeing more and more restrictions and barriers to transporting these metals from where they might exist naturally in the environment into the jurisdictions and countries where they're needed.
I would tend to agree that I think supply chain security is definitely top of mind for a lot of nations. And you're right, there's going to be at least in the U.S. We'll continue to see a trend to either on or nearshoring. And you're right. Positive. I was reading over the weekend someone saying, solar, if you think about it, it's brilliant, brilliant. From an optimization perspective, because you're not losing anything in transmission if you're using it on site. So great example of how, yeah, I mean, if you can recycle on point, there's going to be bigger opportunity to see ROI. Obviously, it depends what the cost is going to be. But as I was listening, you share this, I'm like, I admit I was getting exciting as well, because I'm like, oh, you're just dissecting problem after problem. Let me ask, how does Pangaea, balance between founders you meet and all these opportunities to generate value in the absence of a founder?
Yeah, that's a great question. Christian, this, your audience knows this, and your other guests know this. This is a relationship business more than anything else, first and foremost. And so team is everything. We often track management teams and founders for a minimum of a year before we'll start doing due diligence. We're just in final stages of diligence on a company right now that, maybe in the show notes when this comes out in July, we'll have completed the investment and we can link it. But we've known the company for over 7 years
Oh, wow.
and continue to have built the relationship with the CEO, some of the other investors. And over the course of multiple conversations, it was still too early for us, either from a technology risk standpoint or a commercial adoption standpoint. But now is appearing like it's the right time. They're starting to get sort of accelerating momentum with customers. And this pr the primary use of proceeds from this round is really to scale up manufacturing to fulfill that demand. And so that kind of hits on some of the notes we talked a little bit about earlier. But we also have lots of great experienced operators in our network. And if we come across sort of a university spin out or some really compelling technology that's kind of drifting aimlessly and looking for a home, we might be able to make some introductions along the way to help the inventor start to build a professional team around them to take that company to commercialization, to market. We've got a robust network of seed and angel stage investors who might be interested in participating. And then we'll track and follow their progress. And hopefully 3, 4, 5 years down the road, it's the right fit for us and we can join a Series A or Series B syndicate.
Kudos to you, because I mean, it's actually, if you think about it, brilliant. If you have the planet's health in mind, you're playing a long game. And if you can build an infrastructure or an ecosystem around there where you can play a long game, I mean, you're going to win in the long run. And I imagine that Pangaea's LPs love it. So you touched on AI, and I want to say it's fairly mainstream today, the energy needs, and you touched on chips and power consumption and the need for water. Anything else within AI or just general opinion of how you are optimistic that AI will have a positive impact on the planet's health?
Yeah, that's a really big topic. I think there are a lot of ways that AI, will, help improve, efficiencies, industrial efficiency, help us be more efficient and effective in our day-to-day and, optimize a lot of, routine, repetitive, boring tasks. And it's a massive tool, and anyone who's not utilizing AI, in this business, you should look into it. And I think it's also super complex, and you can't talk about, AI's impact on planetary health without taking a step back and talking about AI ethics and what does this mean, and, the power and energy requirements to support these AI data centers, where is it coming from? And that is a much meatier, deep topic. I don't think I'm equipped to dive into that, but I think it's, maybe over a beer or something that's one to opine on.
Well, on that note, I happen to be aware that there is a tremendous amount of subject matter expertise within Pangea. In fact, you're gearing up to launch the Hard Tech Report. Would love to learn more of what's in store for us.
Yeah. Thanks so much for the opportunity to talk about it. So, as we spent the last, half an hour kind of talking about, hard tech is essential for solving some of the world's most pressing and urgent challenges, whether it's climate resilience, supply chain security, human health, and it's no longer a distant frontier. And so, Pangea has spent 25 years investing in and building expertise and deep networks in sort of hard tech innovation and commercialization. And, we really wanted to synthesize our experience and our knowledge and put together a report that really can provide a framework for hard tech commercialization, pathways to market. What are the sectors and technology segments that we think are really leading? In this space, where are the growth opportunities? And also, we break it out a little bit and share some regional insights. What's happening in North America is a little bit different than what's happening in the European Union or Japan, and that's often, regulatory driven.
And if any of our listeners are interested in subscribing to the report, where can they find it?
They can find it on our website, pangeaventures.com, and I'm sure we'll include a link in the show notes as well.
Perfect. Sarah, before we wrap up, I have I historically have had one, but now two questions I love to wrap up with. And so let me start with the first one, and it's just a retrospective. And so I love to ask if you had an opportunity to go back, have a conversation with your younger self. You can pick the age, totally up to you. But what would you share?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think the conversation I would have with my younger self, let's say maybe 20 years ago, sort of just as I'm starting my career, like a baby professional, would be patient. Yeah, be patient and listen more.
Do you find because there seems to be a longer curve for these technologies, is that the kind of the heart of your counsel to be more patient?
No, I think it's totally unrelated from sort of hard tech and really what we do at Pangea or in venture capital at all. I think just, for me at least, when I was sort of in my early 20s, recently graduated from university, I was super hungry and very ambitious and was looking for sort of that instant gratification and early success. And, we live in a world now where everything is at your fingertips, whether it's finding, a romantic partner or ordering your dinner, everything is available to you instantly. And so finding patience to build maturity and expertise and figure out where you really excel is hard.
Got it. I love it. And I couldn't agree more. I don't know how much of that is because of youth. So if it is, you're in great company. I think it's very good advice. Last question, and I admit a little bit more recent, but one that I'm also finding is a lot of fun to ask. If you had the opportunity to see anybody on the Innovators and Investors podcast, who would you like to see?
Ooh.
And you're welcome to go as big as you want.
That is a phenomenal question. I think it would be really interesting, and this is like me with my sort of hard tech planetary health hat on, would be to hear from somebody like Bill Gates. You know, he recently pledged that, you know, the Gates Foundation is going to wrap up, I think, in about 20 years, and he's going to, you know, disseminate the majority of his wealth. And he is so focused on some of these huge, gritty topics that we focus on in Pangaea, whether it's, you know, decarbonization, access to clean water, you know, healthcare infrastructure, and really how he sees, you know, the challenges unfolding and what solutions are required and scale capital that would be needed.
I agree with you. Challenge accepted. About it, I have a second degree connection to Bill, and so I may have to go see what we can do here. But I think that obviously he's the epitome of a founder, given the success. But yes, he's doing some pretty involved in some pretty amazing things today. Sarah, really appreciate your time. If there are any members of our audience who want to get a hold of you, how can they find you?
Yeah, you can find me on LinkedIn. I am not active on X, but yeah, LinkedIn or directly via email from our website.
Fantastic. And again, for benefit of our audience, Sarah Applebaum, partner at Pangaea Ventures. Sarah, again, thank you. It's been a great podcast.
Thanks so much for having me.
Our pleasure. And again, I'm your host, Christian Marquez, founder, CEO of Finstrat Management. This is another episode of the Innovators and Investors podcast. Thank you for joining us. Christian Marquez here. Thank you so much for listening to the Innovators and Investors podcast. If you're a successful founder or an investor who would like to be on the podcast, please visit podcast.finstratmgmt.com. If you know someone that would be a great guest, please tag them on social media to let them know about the show and include the hashtag Innovators and Investors. I'd love to see your posts and suggestions. We're regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you catch each new episode, please subscribe to the Innovators and Investors podcast. And your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show, and it means a lot to me and my team. If you'd like to know more, go to our website, finstratmgmt.com, or follow us on LinkedIn or on X. Our handle is at finstratmgmt. This is Christian Marquez. Thank you for listening. Until next time.